Coming up on Heard on the Street, how far can the Trump sell-off go? And why the relatively small NVIDIA is now Intel's big competitor.
Stay ahead of the headlines. Stay on top of the markets. This is Heard on the Street from the Wall Street Journal.
Hello and welcome to Heard on the Street, the podcast. We are the Wall Street Journal's home for commentary on all things financial all over the world. Reporting from New York, I'm Miriam Gottfried, joined today by my colleague Spencer Jacob. Hi, Spencer.
Hi, Miriam.
In our second segment, we'll talk about how far the market can fall as the news coming out of D.C. keeps getting crazier. But first, we have Heard on the Street's Dan Gallagher here on the line from San Francisco to talk to us about a company whose stock was the S&P's top performer in 2016. Can you guess? Okay, it's NVIDIA. Hi, Dan.
Hey, how's it going?
I was quizzed at a party at one point about what was the top performer in 2016, and I was like, oh, I know, Dan told me this, but then I couldn't remember the company.
Oh, you got to take notes when we talk.
So, Dan, why has NVIDIA been on such a tear?
It's a really interesting story. It's a company that's having a lot of things go right. They've been historically this company that specializes in what's called like graphics processing units, and these are the chips that that go into like high-end PCs to make the graphics really accelerate the performance of the graphics. And so typically they've been the domain of like the gaming PCs. PC gamers buy these chips a lot, and that's a pretty decent business for them. But it turns out graphics chips are also really good for uses in developing artificial intelligence, especially in data centers, because of their natural capabilities, they're good for this sort of training function when you're training on machine learning. So they've actually are growing this business and selling to companies like Google, Amazon, Microsoft, all the major companies that build these centers, because these companies are trying to embed artificial intelligence into their systems. So that's that, and plus they're targeting autos is another big segment. So they've done really well, and that's
so
and,
it's a new use for the same old chips,
sort of. I mean, they're updating the chips for sure, and they're actually they continue to develop it. NVIDIA's been big on this topic for about 4 or 5 years. I've been listening to them talk about it, but it's not been monetarily wise a sizable business up until in the trailing 12-month period end of March. It's now more than $1 billion in revenue, and that's up from about $300 million the year before. So it's really starting to ramp up, and I spent time yesterday at the Google Developer Conference where on the stage the CEO of Google actually mentioned NVIDIA's name along with the chips that Google itself has designed, all trying to enable this, bring more artificial intelligence into their network. So they're in a really good spot.
And Dan, I mean, you always hear about Intel, AMD, just in terms of relative size. I mean, you've been appropriately bullish on NVIDIA for a while. And a lot of your stories have mentioned self-driving cars, which is a big emerging technology. This seems to be fairly new. I mean, and it's still not a very big company in terms of revenue compared to the chip giants. I mean, how far can this go? How big can this company get given the niche that it finds itself in?
Well, it was interesting. So last week, NVIDIA met with analysts, and one number they shared that had a lot of people kind of gasping is they said they saw a total addressable market just for their data center business of about $30 billion.
Wow.
Which is about 30 times what they have now.
And, wow.
Emerging from that, a lot of analysts said we're kind of doubting that number. They're like, okay, what are they baking into that assumption? And a lot of people forgot that 2 months prior, Intel gave a forecast for essentially the same segment of more than $60 billion.
Wow. Okay.
But they believed it from Intel because I guess Intel already has pretty sizable revenue.
Yeah, Intel has a lot of revenue in this. And the reason that's interesting in the setup that that NVIDIA has maybe relative to Intel is Intel's big. Intel really dominates the data center business now because their chips, their CPUs, are the main brains of servers, and servers are a big component of data centers. But as you embed more artificial intelligence and figure out, these cloud companies are figuring out how to use different types of chips along with CPUs to accelerate and improve their performance, you theoretically get to a point where you don't need to buy as many CPUs because you can use other things to augment their performance. So what you have is, you know, for Intel, it's a problem, not because they're going to get like pushed out of the data center, I think, at all, but, you know, will their growth be what they want it to be and what they really need it to be? Because that's really their main engine of growth right now. And so for NVIDIA, it's really kind of all upside.
So they're not making the same chips as NVIDIA. They're just making chips for the same realm kind of as NVIDIA.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're not like necessarily head on direct. But one thing, like at last week, NVIDIA's CEO gave an example, and this is obviously from their perspective, but he, you know, he gave this example where using their chips, using their chips in the most aggressive way, a data center could replace like a row of servers with two racks.
Wow.
Because you can use a lot of NVIDIA's chips and cut down your need for those central brains. Now, obviously, of course, Intel has very different views, and Intel's been very aggressive in this space too. And they bought Altera to kind of broaden out their exposure in the data center. So it's not it's not clean cut that NVIDIA like takes over for Intel necessarily, but the growth that NVIDIA gets in this segment, some of that is probably going to come at Intel's expense, which is not something Intel can really can afford much of.
I mean, the stakes are very high for Intel. I mean, how difficult is it for them, you know, given their far greater size, to replicate this, to get into the GPU business and be strong? Is it, do they have like a lot of catching up to do?
Well, you know, I mean, they are in it in the sense that they've embedded GPU technology in their chips.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you buy a laptop with an Intel processor, unless it's like a gaming laptop, it's got GPU technology embedded. And what they've actually done for the last 6 years is they've licensed that technology from NVIDIA.
Right.
That licensing deal ran out. So they might renew it with NVIDIA. They might go to AMD, which also has GPU, a GPU business. I think for Intel, their point of view is that, their own technology that they're building and integrating with Altera is still going to be the dominant in the data center. I think the problem for them is that because they have like something like 98% of the data center market right now, they kind of have nowhere to go but down in terms of share, whereas everybody else has nowhere to go but up in terms of share. So that's the... You know, it's not so much, like I said, it's not so much a risk that Intel is going to like get totally pushed out, but they really need all the growth they can get because the PC business, that's still the big part of their revenue, doesn't grow at all.
Dan, how much of this optimism is priced into NVIDIA's shares now? I mean, given the run that they've had.
I think quite a lot. I wouldn't forecast the shares to triple again in the next year for sure, like they did last year.
You don't say.
But I also don't think it's peaked yet because the way the data center market is evolving and how early artificial intelligence is right now in its implementation, I could see like a 2-3 year run ahead where they could get some pretty substantial growth just in their data center business. And I think the market's going to reward that. So I got a feeling that at least for the next couple, 2-3 years, they've got a lot of potential upside here. There's good technical questions that lie kind of beyond, like, you know, as AI gets fully implemented, what kind of chips are going to be best suited for that? I mean, I talked to a lot of very knowledgeable people who don't know the answer to that question yet. So, you know, there's interesting things to think about longer term, but I think near term, NVIDIA's got a lot of pretty strong prospects.
Thank you very much. We are going to have to take a break. Coming up, how low can the market go as the Trump trade rolls off?
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. Robert Half is here to help. Our recruiting professionals utilize our proprietary AI to connect businesses with highly skilled talent. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
The Future of Everything podcast from The Wall Street Journal. Coming Friday, May 19th. What's the future of space and the law?
Companies like Elon Musk's SpaceX.
High-tech guns.
This is about choice in types of gun offered for sale.
Brain implants.
They didn't know how effective this was going to be.
Urban farming.
But what about a building that's 30 stories tall?
And the mass production of meat.
Now these cells came from a duck.
The Future of Everything podcast from The Wall Street Journal. Coming Friday, May 19th.
Stay ahead of the headlines. Stay on top of the markets. This is Heard on the Street from the Wall Street Journal.
Welcome back to Heard on the Street, the podcast. I'm Miriam Gottfried here with Spencer Jacob and our colleague Justin Lehart. Hi, Justin.
Hi.
So the stock market had its worst day since September yesterday. Investors are clearly worried about the fate of the Trump presidency after really what was a crazy week of news. You tried to figure out how far the Trump sell-off could go, and you came up with 5%. How did you get there?
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, the thing to think about, so the stock market has risen at this point, even after the big sell-off, about 10% since the election. So how much of that is about the fundamentals, and how much of that is about sort of excitement about this, the possibility of deregulation and tax cuts? I'm sure, you know, I could, you know, hook together some NVIDIA chips and do, you know, multivariate regression. But, you know, I just, how could I think about that simply? And what I sort of thought is like, okay, so we have an improving global backdrop. That's one thing that we have to understand here is that, you know, the world is getting better, economically at least. Global growth is picking up overseas. We're not as worried about a fragile overseas economies anymore. And we see that in what's happening with earnings. So the first thing to look at is like, well, what's happened with forward earnings estimates? So that was the first piece. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you look at forward overseas estimates for the next 12 months, they're about 5% higher than forward estimates of earnings were in the election, right? So
that's a real fundamental change, not a Trump-driven factor.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's 5%. And then where does the other 5% come? Well, that comes from valuations getting even higher. So the P/E ratio is 17 and some now, the forward P/E ratio, price earnings ratio, and that compares to 16 and some on election day. So what's that about? So that's probably, or a lot of that is about these sort of hopes of a tax cut, right? You get a corporate tax cut, deregulation, it's going to boost earnings, right? So that's where that comes in. So if you start to really worry about the all this nonsense around the Trump presidency is going to derail the Republican agenda, then you have to take that tax cut off the table. You have to take that sort of those deregulatory hopes off the table, right? So that's 5%.
Yeah. You know, Justin, it's funny, about 24 hours before this Trump sell-off began, one of the markets editors here just came over to chat with me and said, you know, if someone had told you, had given you all these headlines of what had been going on, all the things in the first 116 days at that point of the Trump presidency, would you guess that the market would be that much higher? I mean, was the market doing, you know, your point is very well taken about how much downside there is, but was the market handicapping things wrong in terms of this agenda ever getting traction before the sudden sell-off on Wednesday?
Yeah, I always want to be careful about, you know, thinking that I'm smarter than the market. But yes, the market was handicapping things.
Wrote at least a few stories about that, Justin.
And now I'm finally kind of right.
Right. The market takes a little while to figure things out that you figured out for us already.
Yeah. So, you know, It always has seemed like that. And it was the thing that was really striking to one of the things that was really striking to me was, you know, I don't know about you guys. So Tuesday night with the news about the Comey, you know, about former FBI Director Comey's memo. When that came out, I just, you know, I think everybody was sort of up a little too late. And, you know, it came in the morning and things. Even, you know, the market was bad, but the thing that was really striking to me was the notes that started to show up in my inbox from, you know, various, you know, research houses. You know, this isn't Maxine Waters sending me notes, right? These are Wall Street guys, and they're starting to use, like, talk about the possibility of impeachment. That's really, really striking. That was sort of an amazing shift to me.
Well, let me just interject there. Okay, so your base case, I mean, obviously the world is a very complicated place. You did a more kind of straightforward analysis. The world got better.
Yeah.
The Trump agenda on taxes and whatever, things that the stock market was getting excited about, now looks less likely. So this is the downside. Okay. But there's, you know, there are other things that can happen in the future. The future is unknowable. And impeachment or a very drawn out process or sort of paralysis, I mean, that there is more downside if, you know, it's like a 1973, 1974 type situation politically in the U.S. where it just, drags on and on and on.
Right. And we have to remember, so valuations on election day were pretty high, yeah. Right? It's not a cheap market, right? It was kind of an expensive market. So, yeah, for sure. And I mean, and this is sort of the striking thing. I mean, people were sending around charts yesterday of the market in 1973 from the resignation of Spiro Agnew to the resignation of Richard Nixon. I mean, that's kind of crazy.
What happened to the market during that time?
Oh, it was horrible. But there were other things. There was a lot of
uncertainty. I mean, that's the thing. One thing you did say in your piece is this 5% is just sort of like the very mathematical way of looking at it. But there's always going to be some spillover because as more uncertainty and more fear exists, if there is, you know, if the investigation concludes, you know, that there was some impropriety on the part of the Trump administration, then, you know, that could cause the market to fall further. There's no accounting for all the various factors that could cause people to be afraid.
Oh, yeah. And some people are making they have this contrarian case, I should point out. They're like, wow, things are really bad. So, boy, Republicans in Congress are really, really going to, you know, they're going to join together and they're going to get this tax stuff passed as soon as possible because, you know, they're worried that there's going to be a wave election in 2018 and this is their only chance and they need to just ram this stuff through. So, you know, there is that case, too. So, you know,
I guess now that there's a special prosecutor appointed, maybe there's more of a case to be made that they can get back to the agenda. I don't know.
Yeah. or maybe not. Yeah.
Keep on talking about walking and chewing gum at the same time. Just like, well, see, you know, okay.
And what you've said before is that they have some pretty finite windows before the midterms, right, where they can actually accomplish their legislative agenda.
Yeah, they really have to. So the window doesn't close at, you know, November 2018. The window closes sometime, you know, in about a year from now, right? And then, you know, then you're in sort of full midterm mode. And they got a lot of other stuff they have to do. So
and
it's going to be
tax,
tough.
The tax stuff is complicated, right? There's a lot of provisions that even among the GOP, they don't agree on.
Yeah, who knew taxes could be so complicated?
I know. That was amazing. That's amazing. I mean, in some things, and it's still, you know, I think you were pointing out, so, you know, Wednesday, this horrible, horrible market, and retailers did better, you know, maybe because people were finally thinking that, you know, the border, this idea of taxing imports was, you know, finally off the table. I mean, it's striking me how slow it is for people to sort of say, oh, yeah, maybe that's not going to happen.
Yeah, right? I know. It is amazing.
I thought it was done. I thought we knew the border adjustment wasn't going to happen. And then still people are still talking about, oh, maybe this will happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess maybe people know in their minds, but how long does it take for them to delete it from their models?
Or people have some kind of fancy pants model that puts in, you know, a 15% chance of this happening.
Right. Anyway, we are going to take a quick break. When we come back, more on President Trump and the market.
Coming Friday, May 19th, the Future of Everything podcast from The Wall Street Journal. The Wall Street Journal. Listen ambitiously.
Stay ahead of the headlines. Stay on top of the markets. This is Heard on the Street from The Wall Street Journal.
So, Justin, I'm going to put you on the spot here and say, when does the Trump sell-off, if it continues, become a buying opportunity?
Oh, jeez.
Do we wait for it to fall 5%?
And you just reach in and catch that fallen knife. You know, I really don't know.
When would you say stocks will be undervalued? Like just on a PE basis?
On a PE basis?
Yeah.
Ooh, let's see. We're at 16 and something times forward. So what do you think? 12, Spencer?
Ooh,
That's low.
That's brutal.
That would be brutal.
That would be really brutal.
I don't have an NVIDIA chip in my brain.
We're talking about undervalued stocks here, you know?
Yeah.
14, right? I mean, we're talking, right? You have to go.
I mean, that's 800 S&P points.
Yeah, that's a big fall.
Yeah, let's say that
that's
it's
a Trump
assuming forecasts don't change too,
yeah.
right?
I mean,
we're probably 20%, you know, above undervalued, right?
Pick your measure, but yeah,
right.
The market is richly valued on many measures for sure. Yeah,
so, yeah, I mean, definitely there are certain situations where you know you go in and you know, you can say now that you should just go and buy everything up. And those are usually the situations that are so scary that nobody wants to.
Mm.
See, I'm avoiding your question.
Well, I think if the market falls 5%, I might take a look, you know.
Yeah. I guess it really depends on the news flow. I mean, does the news flow slow down? I mean, this has been...
That's a real question.
This has been an extraordinary week. I mean, this has been...
Somebody compared it to an episode of Lost, and so we said, no, it's like 87 seasons of Lost, you know, so far, right? I mean...
I know.
And it's only May.
A lot of twists. Exactly.
It's only... Well, I mean, just this week. I mean, Monday seems so long ago. My goodness.
It's true. Well, on that note, we are going to have to end it there. That wraps things up for this week's Heard on the Street podcast. Please join us every week for the latest in global investing. For more, please check us out at wsj.com/heard. That's wsj.com/heard. You can also email us with your comments, suggestions, or questions at heardpodcast@wsj.com. From New York, I'm Miriam Gottfried. On behalf of the rest of the Heard on the Street team, thanks for listening.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.